Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today, Ty Hendrickson. Hello to you.
Hi, good morning.
It is great to have you on the show. For the benefit of people that may not have come across you and the brilliant stuff that you do, just tell us a bit about your background and your areas of expertise.
Sure. So I am actually a recovering CPA. I was in practice for quite some years right out of college. I met my husband at the firm, and he's a much better accountant than myself, so he stayed there. And I took a complete turn in my career and somehow decided to go into sales at Wolters Kluwer. So I spent 12 plus years in sales, sales training, sales leadership at Wolters Kluwer and at Bloomberg B&A. And then a couple years ago, decided that accountants needed sales help. So that's kind of how the sales seed was born.
Sales is not a word that accountants are comfortable with, is it? It's not part of their vocabulary, really.
Not at all. And believe me, I thought long and hard about this name before actually committing to it. But one of the things that I want to do and my goal is to make accountants more comfortable with sales. The word, the actions, it's part of their job now. And so I made it a very intentional to make sure that sales was in the name so that they know that that's what we're all about and that's what we're helping them get more comfortable with.
But Ty, why do they struggle with that? It's been ever thus, hasn't it, with people like accountants that are technically brilliant, but they do struggle with not just selling products and services, but selling themselves.
Oh yeah. They think of used car salesmen and they get a bad rap because some of them are very pushy and very aggressive. And by nature, that's not an accountant. They're not pushy. They're not aggressive. They're not typically very outgoing unless it's something they're comfortable with. It's just kind of been ingrained to them that sales is something completely different than anything that they would normally do. And it just scares them a little to get outside of their comfort zone. And sales really shouldn't be pushy. It shouldn't be aggressive. And so doing it the right way, it's a lot easier for them to get comfortable with.
Yeah. And we'll get some tips from you on what doing it the right way looks like. But what would you say to the accountant, the CPA, Ty, that said, well, listen, I'm not hired to sell. I'm hired for my tax knowledge, for my expertise in accounting and audit and everything else. I shouldn't have to sell. It's not part of my role. It's not why I came into this.
So my question for them is, who are you going to do that technical work for if you're not selling it to someone?
But they might say, well, that's why I'm joining an accounting firm, because they'll have people that will do that. They've got marketing people. They've got business development people. I'm just there to do the work and earn the fees. What would we say to that?
Truth be told, there are marketing and business development people in firms now. 10 years ago, that was not a thing, but they are there now, but they're really at the bigger firms. So You're not going to see that at every single firm that you go to. But besides having that type of support, which is phenomenal, and it does make it easier when you have that type of support, my question to them is, what are their career goals? Because any partner you talk to now, any firm leader, they are almost requiring that for every single person to make it to equity partner. So if that's not your goal, fine. That's totally fine. And there's people that take those non-traditional paths. Some people are so incredibly technically savvy that they don't have to do that, but you're probably going to find one to two at every firm. Everyone else is going to have to be able to bring something to the table in terms of clients.
Yeah, and that's the point. I could not agree more. And if you want to make partner and beyond, you need to contribute to the revenues of the firm, which doesn't come just through generating fees and doing the work, but bringing in new clients and creating new opportunities. So they have to adopt this skill set, don't they, of selling?
Absolutely. If you're not bringing revenue in, there's no growth and they're not going to look at you as a leader.
So would you be of the school that salespeople are born or made, Ty?
Gosh, there are traits that you can be born with that make it easier for you to be outgoing and put yourself out there. And I think that's some of the struggles that accountants have. But on the flip side of it, sales can be a lot about numbers and metrics and understanding goals. And those come natural to accountants. So I think that if you have the base and you have have the ability to have conversations with people, you do. Everybody does. You just have to get comfortable with it. And if you have the desire to do it, it can be taught. But the biggest piece there is coachability and the desire to do it, because anybody can give you the tools every day on how to bring in new business. But if you don't want to do it and you don't actually go out and put yourself out there, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And when you look at the skill sets of accountants, we know they've got the technical skills. We know they've got sometimes the technological skills, but to really push on, they need the people skills these days. They need that commercial acumen, those commercial skills, and the ability to sell. And that is the premium package, isn't it, for success in accounting?
Oh, absolutely.
So when we look at some terms here, we hear rainmaking, we hear marketing, we hear business development, we hear sales. So do you want to just dip into the Ty Hendrickson dictionary and let's get some definitions here so that the accountants and CPAs listening, they're really clear on what we're talking about.
I love it. I've never had my own dictionary. Maybe this needs to be printed up because I've got way more terms than just these.
But I know. But this is the thing, isn't it? If you ask five accountants what selling is, you'll get five different answers.
Absolutely. And I think this is where a lot of the confusion comes in accounting firms, because marketing, business development, and sales are all different things.
Right.
You look at any other organization out there, they're going to have marketing people. They're going to have business development people. They're going to have sales people. And all of those roles are differentiated. But the magic is when they all work together. So your marketing people are out there to drive brand awareness and make sure people know about you and get a good reputation in whatever niche or community that you're in. But outside of that, you know, a lot of firms look to their marketing people to sell. And yes, they probably could, but if they're selling, they're taking away from their marketing duties. And then your business development people, those are really the people out there that are trying to drive leads. They're trying to bring new opportunities to companies and firms. And so those individuals, their goal really should to be get out there and to build upon that brand awareness that the marketing folks are out there building in the community, and to start figuring out how to convert that into opportunity. But your salespeople are the ones that really take those opportunities, run with them, are able to negotiate, you know, their rates and what you're going to do and what the best fit for the client, all of that fine tuning to close the business. That's what your salesperson is doing, is really trying to find the right fit for the customer if they're a good salesperson.
Sure.
So if they're all working together, then it makes the cycle so much easier for the salesperson to close it. So firms that have marketing and business development, they should be driving that to the accountant, because who's the best person to close the client on what they're going to do for them but the accountant? And that's where the accountant really needs to understand the sales side of it so that they can capitalize on everything that the marketing and BD people and firms are doing for them.
Yeah. But in the firms, as you hinted, that don't have a marketing or business development function, the accountant has got to do it all themselves. That fee in it, they've got to be marketers, rainmakers, business developers, sellers. But we're almost talking about, you know, the old phrase, farmers and hunters, and different skill sets, yes, almost different types of people. So how hard is it for them to embrace all of those personas?
Well, I think it is scary. And I think that's where they get nervous and it gets frustrating. And without a proper framework and without understanding what needs to be done, they go out and do what's always been done in the past. And that's networking and build relationships and hope that leads come in. But the way firms are changing in the business that they're doing, it doesn't work anymore. So what makes sense if they're trying to take on all of those personas is to understand the efficiency part of each one. And to do that, you really have to get into your niche and understand, look, I'm not building a brand for the entire firm out there if I'm going networking, right? I need to figure out how to bring clients in. So who do I need to get in front of that's a good client for me? And then how do I talk to those people? How do I articulate value? How do I generate those leads? And if you're focusing on what you're good at and the clients that you need to work with, then you can pull the pieces out of marketing and business development and sales that'll make the process easier for you as an end result. So you don't have to embrace the whole part of it, but you need to know which pieces of it make it easier for you to drive new opportunities.
That's a great point, because some accountants feel like they've got to sell for the whole firm. So I'm not just looking out for me. I am out there creating opportunities opportunities for my colleagues. Everyone's encouraging me to not work in a silo, but to find cross and upselling opportunities for other people in the firm. But what you're saying is, look, personalize it, look after yourself first and go after what you need to go after.
Absolutely. And funny, because I was having this conversation with another marketing professional at a firm recently, and I love the way she put it, because we're talking about how you really have to figure out your niche and you really have to figure out how to sell yourself. But the secondary piece to that is understanding what your firm does. So you lead with what you do. You lead with trying to find opportunities for yourself. They're not always going to be right in your niche, but you're comfortable having that conversation. Well, then someone may say, you know what? That really is outside of what I'm looking at right now. What I focus on is X. And then you say, you know what? Actually, I have someone at the firm that specializes in that. I'd love to make an introduction. So you do have to know the ins and outs of your firm. You have to understand what your firm offers as a whole, and then start with, you know, working towards opportunities for yourself. And then absolutely, if you know what everyone else does, you know, you can pass those along and create those other revenue streams for other people too.
Yeah. Now, you've been a CPA, Ty. How coachable are accountants as a breed? We know they're super smart. They've studied, got all their exams and everything else. So we know they can learn, but do they come into that accounting role and say, right, I've done all of my studying, I've done all my learning now, and you find that they're tough to coach, or are they actually quite open to what you teach?
It truly depends on their desire. If their firm is coming in and saying, look, if you want to make it to equity partner, you have to bring in X dollars. You have to go out and do this. And they're like, but I don't want to. I'm just doing this because they tell me I have to.
Yeah.
Those are harder to get to. But if they're like, look, this is, I want to do this for myself. I want to prove what I can do. I want to get out there and really build the practice that I want, right? Then they're open to it. They do it. They do everything, and they do it by the book, and it has tremendous results.
Yeah. You teach sales frameworks, don't you, and methodologies, because accountants as a breed, they need process, they need prescription, they need almost what to do and what to say. So talk to us about the types of sales frameworks that accountants should use.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's truly how I fell in love with sales. You know, when I started in sales, I'll never forget my first day at CCH, I was selling tax software. First thing I was like, how do I record my time? They're like, you don't do that anymore. I'm like, and that was the hardest transition I had. But then the second thing I said is, okay, where do I start? And they go sell tax software. I said, okay, how? And they're like, just go sell it. I thought, okay, I've been over my head. This was a mistake. This is crazy. And then we ended up in some pretty specialized sales process and sales training. And they laid out a very simple framework of a sales funnel. They talked about, you know, look, if you have a goal of X dollars, we can back into how many people you need to talk to based on your close ratio, based on your average deal size, based on how, you know, you move people through the process. And then it just clicked. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is just numbers. Like, this is what I needed to know. And so when you break it down in terms of, okay, in order to reach X goal, I have to do these tasks and talk to this many people, then it all of a sudden became easier and I could manage that process. And so that's what we do with accountants. We have a very simple 5-step sales process that we take them through that starts with figuring out who their ideal client is. That's the key to all this, because you look at any new business, first part of their go-to-market strategy is, who's my target market? Who's going to buy what I'm selling? And accountants may be the only people that don't do that when they start trying to build their own practice. They just think, okay, I got to find someone that'll let me do work for them. And that's when the net gets too big, it becomes confusing and it becomes hard. And so if we can get to the point where we say, look, I'm in Kentucky, right? And so we have a lot of horse farms here. And so I say, you know what? I want to specialize in the equine industry. I want to specialize in this area. Sure, I can do other things, but these are the clients that I want. It is so much easier to find those prospects and to figure out what to say and have those conversations, as opposed to just saying, okay, I want to go find any small business. That becomes complicated. So the process we take them through is starting with who their ideal client is, figuring out how to get a meeting, what you need to do at that meeting to win the business, and then how to negotiate the final stage so that you're not cutting your rates, because that truly is where it falls apart. I see with so many people as they get to the very end, they get a little pushback and they don't understand how to navigate that negotiation process, and they end up taking it, you know, giving a discount or taking a slash on their fees, and then it just becomes a struggle. And if you can nail down those 4 stages, the last stage is basically getting to sign, it becomes so much more comfortable to manage the process.
Yeah. So a framework like that, it sounds obvious when you say it, but it must change the way accountants approach selling, because they think a light goes on and think, well, I can do that just like you did.
Yeah, it happens almost immediately. But then all of a sudden they're like, but I can't narrow down my ideal client. You know, like the firm does this, or I've done all of these different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have these different areas of expertise. And if I go too narrow, I'm not going to be able to find enough people. And that's really getting buy-in on that part of the process and getting people over that hump is really where the magic starts to happen. And so I challenge everyone to take a step back and look at who their ideal client is and look at how they're approaching business development and trying to find those people, because your frustrations come from going to all these networking events and just hoping something comes. But if you can say, look, I'm going to this event, this person that's going to be there fits my ideal client profile. I want to try to meet with them. These other people can connect me into my ideal client base. And you become more intentional with those conversations, and then that becomes measurable. Not to say you run in and just attack those people, but you know, you make a point to hit strategic people in those events, and things happen quicker and more efficiently when you can do that.
Sure. Now, you're talking about networking, and we know in COVID times that we're in tight, you and I have both been teaching business development and sales for a long time. That world is gone, at least for the time being. So when accountants talk about virtual or remote selling, how has the game changed even just recently?
That is a fabulous question. And we talk about this so much. I mean, networking in its old traditional sense in face-to-face is gone, but people are still networking remotely.
True.
And when you find your ideal client and you figure out where they are, you can get involved with those organizations. They're still meeting, you know, remotely. And when you figure out what area you need to be in, you can get more involved in that area. So you still have opportunities to network remotely. You know, with LinkedIn, everybody's talking about that. Everyone says you need to have an online presence. And I absolutely agree. I think it's definitely time to dust off that LinkedIn profile, make sure that it speaks to your ideal client, and to start building that network. Now, the one thing that is driving me crazy about LinkedIn right now, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is I'm getting so many sales messages on LinkedIn. Are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. It's crazy to me, because they haven't earned the right to sell me. And that's one of the things that we talk about, is you have to earn the right to sell someone. So if you're building a network on LinkedIn, you need to be genuine about it. You need to be intentional with who you reach out to, send messages, connect with them, and then provide value, whether that's through the content that you're delivering. If you are messaging someone, you better be giving them value and not asking for anything in return, because you're working on earning that right. People are so easy to get behind a computer screen and forget how networking works and how selling works, and think that they can just spam people. But that's not what LinkedIn was built for. It was built to make connections. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of people have a lot of success with putting themselves out there. They know their ideal client, so they're putting them out as an industry expert. They're building up their own brand as someone who knows a lot about a specific industry. And then the connections and the conversations are starting to happen naturally that way.
So in our world, Ty, we talk about inbound and outbound stuff. So inbound would be you put your blogs out there, you create your content and your thought leadership and build your personal brand that way. And outbound stuff would be when you make the phone calls and the emails and all of that stuff. So are you advocating to accountants that they should be doing both?
Let me tell you, if I told an accountant to cold call someone, I'm pretty sure they would run screaming from me. So, this is not a cold calling industry. It's just not.
But it's outreach though, isn't it? It's getting on the radars of people.
Yes. And so the way we look at it is you do need to have outreach. You do need to put yourself out there. You do need to ask for a meeting, but we go through different ways to warm people up. And that's, we're building a prospect list. We're actually targeting people that we want to do business with, but we're finding warmer ways in, whether that's through an introduction, through a mutual connection, or whether that's through a mutual interest that you're working on, or whether that's finding a way to provide value, maybe inviting that person to a networking event. A lot of these firms are hosting webinars or lunch and learns, when we get back to it, you know, different types of educational events. Reaching out and asking someone to come to that is outbound, right? It is outreach that you're doing, but you have a reason and you're offering value in return for what you're asking them. A true cold call is me calling you and saying, hey, Rob, Ty Hendrickson here with the sales seat. Have you ever heard of us? Right? And having educate someone. And accountants aren't going to do that, right? So there's lots of different strategies to warm up your prospects and give them value before asking for something in return.
Yeah, I get that. We have a phrase here in the UK called switch business. And you'll have a similar term, I guess. But if you think about the accountants and CPAs out there that are looking for new business clients, those clients are going to have to come from a current accounting firm, aren't they? So getting the client to switch from that incumbent firm to your firm, that takes some doing, doesn't it? So have you got any tips on that? How do you go about it?
I love that you brought this up, because this goes into the negotiation and the meeting prep and everything, because it goes into cost of change, right? And so you have to think about how you're presenting your value and what you're going to do for that prospective client, and what you're offering them has to be of greater value than what it's going to cost them to change.
Okay.
Think about cell phone providers, right? You have a cell phone right now, and let's say that the competitor calls you up and says, hey, I'd love for you to switch to whatever the new cell phone provider is, you know, and you say, okay, well, I'm open to it. Tell me what you can offer. And they're like, well, I'm going to give you exactly what you have now for the same price.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, no, because I have to go through a process to change this. I'm not going to do it for what I'm getting now. If you're asking someone to make that switch, you either have to be offering more value or you have to be offering them less of a price. And no one wants to do it as a price cut, because if you get a client because you're cheaper, they're going to go to the next person that pitches them a cheaper price. And then it's just a snowball effect. So what you have to look for is when you're pitching someone and you're trying to get them to switch, you have to make sure, one, you've covered everything they have now so they won't be losing anything when they change. But then you also have to be going above and beyond what they're getting now and finding new ways to help them, ways to address a challenge that they have that they're not getting now, or a way that you're helping them achieve a goal that they're not getting now, because that's giving them more value than they are now. And they're also going to be open to paying a premium to switch to you if the value is there. So for me, it's all about the cost of change and making sure that you're not asking someone to switch for what they're getting now.
I like the phrase POI. We've heard of ROI, return on investment, but POI is the pain of inaction.
Yes.
What results from not changing what you're doing? Because we know in COVID times, there are businesses that have not been served well by their accountant, or they've outgrown their accountant, who cannot deal with the complexity of COVID, who are trying to deal with situations that they cannot handle. So those clients do need to find new advisors and CPAs. So they've got to be on the radars of those people. Otherwise, they're not going to switch, are they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that you brought this up, because we're seeing so many firms now, their current firm or whoever they're using can't handle a consulting engagement for what they're going through right now, and they're going to someone else. Well, if they're coming to you for a consulting engagement, you need to be trying to win their complete business, because they already know, like, and trust you enough to do that.
Yeah.
So now that opens the door. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And as a former CPA, Ty, where do you sit on the compliance advisory debate? Compliance, downward pressure on fees, it's becoming commoditized, it's all in advisory now. What do you think about that?
Gosh, you know, as someone who worked in software sales for so long, I have seen that automation happen and all of that technology happen. And it was so amazing when it started, but you're right, it's totally pushed the cost down, the profitability. You still have to do that to some extent, because everyone needs that. And if you're not going to offer it and you say, look, I'm only going to do advisory services, then they're going to have to go to someone else for compliance, and you don't want that break. But one of the things that I love about advisory services is that you can package those into annual programs and renewable groups of products. So advisory services, you can include their tax return or that type of compliance work, but also bundle in, let's say you are working with new businesses, you can bundle in some financial statements and some consulting work on profitability, and you can bundle in those phone calls that no one wants to charge for in these advisory services, because when you have that compliance work, you actually have some data to look at to see where their struggles are and see how you can add value. And if you bundle all of that together, then you're getting more of that reliance from the clients, and you're building that relationship to where the loyalty comes into play, and it's going to be much harder. Cost of change is going to be much harder at that point as well for them to leave.
So true. Talk to us about the importance of culture in an accounting firm in providing that environment for sales to happen to give them permission to go out there and do business development, to release them from churning out fees and utilization and all of that stuff. Culture must play a part, right?
Culture is huge. And second to sales, culture is my second love. It just makes such a difference in an organization. And total side note, I mean, firms are struggling right now recruiting and retaining their best staff. Well, that comes from culture. And part of that is a sales culture. And part of it is you look at so many firms and they're so worried about the bottom line and they're so worried about the revenue that's coming in and the realization. But then they say, but we want you to go get more clients. Well, if you're not incentivizing them first, I mean, that there should be incentives to going out and bringing in new business. But secondary, the way the reviews work and the way their jobs are, their performance is reviewed every year. If that's not a part of it, they're going to pick doing the technical work. People are going to pick how they're going to get paid the most and how they're going to get a better review. And so firms have to look at culture as a whole and figure out, how do we incentivize this? How do we free up those opportunities? And part of it is the more efficient you get, the less time away from the billable work you have to do that. But the other piece of this is starting when you're younger. And if you have a sales culture across the entire firm, you can look at opportunities at different levels for ways to people to start building these skill sets that make sense for where they are in their career. And then they don't make it to the point where they're like junior partner and they have no new clients and they don't know how to have these conversations and they don't understand sales. So culture plays a huge part in whether or not the firm is successful bringing in new business, but it also plays a huge part in developing those individuals to be ready to take that role on. You can't expect people to flip it on like a switch and be able to do that.
But how do you deal with these senior partners, managing partners? They've been in this game a while. They've built their network. They've done their business development. They just want to sit on a big portfolio of lucrative clients and do their exit and take the money out. They're not interested in getting out there anymore. They don't want to push a business development and selling culture. What kind of things do you say to them?
I think there's a difference in them going out and doing the same activities as a junior partner and them providing the right leadership that enables those junior partners to get out there and providing them support.
Right.
It can be something as simple as being a mentor to one of those junior partners and helping coach them through the process and their conversations and where they're going. They don't have to be doing it themselves, but supporting plays a huge role in it.
Yeah. I got to ask you about the billable hour, because we know how accountants are chained to the desk and they've got all the technical duties and stuff that they need to do. But business development, they're not really paid to do that. They're not paid to network. They're paid on the results of networking. So how do we square that circle? Because accountants say, I'm too busy to do business development.
I totally agree. And that is one of the biggest challenges that firms have. But one of the ways to be successful at this is to individualize it, right? Because you have five junior partners. One may never be a rainmaker. Yeah. One may have incredible potential. So if you individualize it and give maybe that rainmaker a little more leeway in terms of their billable hour goals, then they're going to have the opportunity to get out there and do this. And you are going to have to take some sort of reduction in billable hours. But if you're doing business development properly and you're bringing in new business, the amount of money they should be bringing in should far outweigh the reduction in those billable hours. And then the other piece to this is if you're pushing some of that work down and you're pushing down some of the client communication and some of the things that take away from a junior partner or a manager to be able to get out there and do this, if you push that down and give some of the younger staff a little more opportunity to communicate, a little more opportunity to talk to clients or be client-facing for some smaller clients, right? They're going to be better prepared when they get a little bit more. So it's all about looking at what that individual is doing. How much time do they really need to do their business development activities? What drop can you make in their billable hours? And then what are they doing that they could push down? Because if you want someone to bring in new business, you have to give them the opportunity to do it. And you don't want to cause burnout by saying, look, just do it after hours, because they're just going to leave and find another firm that's going to let them do it in a more timely manner during the day. But then you're better preparing everyone down the line as they come up. So you have to look at the individual, I think.
Is it feasible, Ty, for an accountant to say, I don't want to be externally facing, but I want to do BD, so I'm just going to work my client portfolio. I'm going to get cross-selling and upselling and advisory, and I'm going to get referrals from them. If I do that, is that good enough? Would that work?
Well, it depends on what their client roster looks like. At some point, you're going to run out cross-selling opportunities.
Yeah.
So if they have a massive referral referral network and they're getting tons of referrals out of it. It's worked in the past, but I don't think that that is a good strategy for everyone. There's always outliers, right? But if you're not bringing in new clients, then eventually you're going to run out of clients to upsell. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, and you've got to get out there. Ty, this has been terrific. If people want to learn more about you and the great stuff that you do, I know you work internationally. So what's a good way for people to reach you?
Probably the easiest way is to just email me at ty@thesalesseed.com. You can visit our website and find out about the different programs we offer and that thesalesseed.com. And then we actually have a guide that we recently published. It's a workbook on how to get 100 new prospects in a month. And then for anyone that's interested in an easy way to start the process or what it takes to grow your book of business, we have a workbook that we've recently released, and it takes you day by day through 1 month on easy ways to add 100 new prospects to your list. So we'll include that link with my bio in order to access that. But we're all about really giving you the support to get out there and start the process. Because once you get over that first hump, it all becomes so much easier and you really understand it and it just starts working. So, yeah.
Well, Ty, leave us with you with a few final words to the accountants and CPAs listening who want to be more confident and more effective in bringing in new clients. What two or three tips might you give them?
The first thing that I always tell people is really nail down your value. Your value is not the product you deliver. Your value comes from your education, expertise, all the work you've done, your relationships, and nail down that value because you've got to get comfortable talking about yourself. And then from there, figure out your ideal client, figure out who it is that you want to work with, because gosh, if we're doing this day in and day out, you might as well enjoy it. And then figure out how that value translates to your ideal client. Because once you can communicate your value to a specific set of individuals or prospects, those conversations get so much easier. And it takes practice, and getting an elevator pitch is part of it. Once you start there, then you can really jump into everything else, but nothing else works if you don't know your value and know your ideal client and know how to articulate that value to your ideal client.
That's very good. And just to finish, knowing your ideal client, people say, well, where do I start? But is a good place to start who you're working with right now that you really enjoy working with? Is that a good place?
Yeah. A lot of times when I sit down with people in the beginning, we look at their current client roster. We look for trends. We look for the ones that are the most profitable. I mean, that should play a part in it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't want to work for nothing. You want to look at your industries. You want to look at your connections. You also want to look at who you don't like to work with. And weed those. I mean, that's just as important. So it really is. And then from there, it's a lot of self-reflection, but evaluate your current client roster and then figure out who you want to work with from there.
Well, Ty Hendrickson, that's been great today. Thank you so much for your passion, for your insights, and for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world-class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.